Welcome to the ASPR podcast Inside Conflict with Moritz Ehrmann. So in our previous episode of ASPR's Inside Conflict, we had a fascinating discussion on the implications of Iraq's parliamentary elections, government formation, and their implications for Iraq's nascent democracy and the country's stability and welfare. In the course of the next two episodes, we will be discussing the challenges that will be faced by the next government, whatever the final shape it may take. With us are again two eminent experts on Iraqi affairs, Ambassador Dr. George Bustin and Mr. Sajjad Jiyad. Ambassador Dr. George Bustin is an esteemed retired member of the Hungarian Foreign Service. He has extensive diplomatic experience, including posts as ambassador of Hungary in Libya, Indonesia, and Iran. And very importantly for this discussion, of course, he was from 2011 to 2017 deputy special representative of the United Nations Secretary General with the UN's mission in Iraq, UNAMI. Currently, Ambassador Bustin is a visiting research professor at the National University of Singapore's Middle East Institute. Before that, he was a most valuable consultant for the ASPR's activities in Iraq. Most welcome to you, Ambassador.
Thank you very much, Mr. Director, and I'm very appreciative of you inviting me.
Mr. Sajjad Jiyad, on the other hand, is an Iraqi political analyst based in Baghdad. His focus is on public policy and governance in Iraq, and he also works on capacity building of public institutions and civil society organizations. Mr. Jiyad is a fellow at the Sentry International and director of the Shia Politics Working Group. He is the former managing director of the Al Bayan Center, an Iraqi policy institute, and he also served as a visiting fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations. Welcome also to you, Mr. Jiyad.
Thank you, Moritz. Looking forward to the discussion.
So in this second, hopefully very interesting discussion with Ambassador George Bustin and Mr. Sajjad Jiyad, we're going to focus more on the dynamics around Iraq, so the geopolitical situation that does have such a strong effect on what is possible and what is not possible to do for any government, for any political process, and even in a wider sense, society. So in the last discussion, during the last episode, we already touched upon one very prominent issue, which is the issue of the so-called Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA, as it is in its acronym. So what could the effect of a JCPOA that was, again, successfully concluded or sort of reinstated have on the situation in Iraq, perhaps in terms of the armed actors that are around there, the relations to Iran, the relations to the United States, and conversely, of course, what would a situation where these negotiations failed have on Iraq? Let us start this time with you, Ambassador George Bustin.
Thank you very much. A very pertinent question. My conversations with experts, both in Iraq and here in Southeast Asia, have convinced me that the general perception is that an Iran not anymore burdened with sanctions and not anymore cornered the way it has been in the last couple of years will be a blessing for Iraq, and it will certainly be a factor of positive progress and hopefully better prospects for peace and stability in the region. I assume that the negotiations, which are dragging on for quite some time now, could eventually lead to a situation where both parties, Iran and the international negotiators, can find a solution not just to the major technical issues which are at stake, but also to some sort of an entrance to a regional détente. It will not come immediately. I assume that as soon as Iran is not anymore deprived of the economic oxygen, so to speak, it will not feel the urge to continue relying on some of those methods that Iraq is particularly found very injurious in the last couple of years. Let us not talk in a Schiffer sense, but let us talk more openly. Let us admit that Iraq was not only sustaining itself in the last couple of years, but in a certain way was also sustaining two, if not three, other countries. And the oil income of Iraq, as we know from various open sources, has been helping many of Iraq's partners, as they say, willy-nilly. And the government of Iraq was obliged to go along with requests that were not necessarily conducive to the Iraqi economy. I have to say that if and when these pressures will ease, it will have a beneficial effect, not just on the bilateral relations between Iran and Iraq, but I hope also on the area in general, and it will facilitate for Iraq its movement in other directions. We know perfectly well that there was a sense of solidarity, well-placed or misplaced, let the Iraqis themselves decide, which has overarched the situation in the last couple of years. And I hope that if these pressures that I alluded to will ease, then Iraq will find it much easier to strike an accord and go ahead in building relationships with its neighbors all over the region. We know perfectly well that one major issue, which was about how Iraq will be able to compensate for the tragic results of its aggression against Kuwait, has been sorted out, and Iraq is technically out of Chapter 7. This is a very important positive development for Iraqi foreign policy, and it will be another step in the direction of re-engaging Iraq with all its regional neighbors. Beyond that, I think there are issues related to economy and environment which have to be tackled on a wide-ranging and regional basis. And in this respect, Iraq's free movement will be a very welcome development. I hope that it will be not just an issue relating to economy, but also to water, because we know perfectly well that water is a most critical issue, not just for Iraq, but for the entire region. And it is a key to future development and also to the solution of a host of socio-economic problems that have traditionally been besetting Iraq. So let us remain optimistic and let us hope that with the positive developments, Iraq can also forge a relationship with its wider environment that will be conducive to its progress and stability.
Thanks a lot, Ambassador George. Also, a very comprehensive answer to my question. Sajjad, turning to you, So Ambassador George has, of course, focused quite a lot on the pressures that are upon Iraq from the sides of different international and regional powers. Now, of course, at least the government of Mustafa al-Kadhimi has tried to, in a way, increase efforts to make Iraq step out of this position of victim in the regional dynamics and become a sort of proactive actor that tries to even to mediate between those really sort of antagonistic forces and states in the region. How do you see this dynamic developing with everything that's happening around, from negotiations between Iranians with the West, negotiations on a regional level? Do you think, to put it very sort of concretely, there will be a second Baghdad summit, such as the one that brought together all sorts of regional countries last August, in the near future?
Well, certainly the regional situation from Iraq's point of view is much better now than it was a year ago or 2 years ago. It's much more positive. Iraq has been able to bring a few of these countries together in meetings. It has been helpful in sort of the Saudi-Iran discussions and you know, dialogue. It has moved away sort of from the maximum pressure that it was suffering from when President Trump was in power, and is starting to find more acceptance for Iraq's role within the region, whether it's talking to Syria or talking to Iran or talking to Saudi or working with Lebanon. And certainly, I think the recent efforts by this prime minister, Prime Minister Kadhimi, and the previous prime ministers to also engage a bit further out. You mentioned the Mashraq al-Jadid. We've also seen, you know, Iraq's efforts to sort of extend its relations with other countries, even with those where there are significant challenges. With Turkey, there's the issue of water, of course. Previously, with Kuwait, we've had the problems of compensation and missing people from the Gulf War. With Syria, we've had our issues with, you know, terrorism and border control, with Jordan as well and others. And I think Iraq is in a good place right now. I think it definitely needs a little bit more capacity and bandwidth to be able to step up its strategic engagement with some of these countries in terms of its foreign relations. I think, you know, there will always be tension between Iran and the US. I don't think that can be avoided. And I think that Iraq can play a role in reducing some of these tensions, but also to build up its own leverage and build up its own capability so that it can resist pressure from Iran and the US inside Iraq. I think it has improved from where it was before, but it's still susceptible to that relationship. What goes on between America and Iran does have an impact on what goes on inside Iraq. And I think Iraq needs to build up its resistance to that. It still has some way to go. Certainly, I think there is much less tension than there was in this relationship, you know, 6 months ago, 12 months ago. And I think that is positive for Iraq. But going forward, we cannot just be reactionaries. We cannot just wait for situations to develop and for us to react. I think Iraq needs to start its own regional initiative, something along the lines of economic cooperation, something along the lines of, you know, trying to achieve security through economic cooperation, and trying to work out a deal with Turkey on water and Iran on water, trying to sort of interconnect their electrical grid, which is already underway with the Gulf, trying to come to an understanding with the other countries such as Syria and Jordan about what Iraq can do in terms of trying to improve their sort of economy, but also what Iraq would benefit in return. All of these would sort of help Iraq's position in the region. It certainly, you know, come out from isolation a few years ago. From 2014 onwards, Iraq came out of isolation and relations with other countries in the Middle East improved. But I still think there's much more to go. And I hope that the next government is empowered to do so. I hope the next prime minister is empowered to do so. But also part of it is, at the moment, we're dependent on what happens in in the region. We're dependent on the geopolitics. You know, does the talks between Iran and the US break down? Is there a problem between sort of Qatar and Saudi again? Does, you know, Syria still feel isolated by the rest of sort of the international community? Russian actions, Chinese actions, American actions in the Middle East. There's so many elements there, in addition to climate change, in addition to sort of the war situation. So unfortunately, not everything is in our hands at the moment. Still, we are reacting to what goes on the ground. And yes, there is a lot of potential for disruption and instability in the Middle East. But I would hope that Iraq develops its capacity to improve its relations and the depth of its relations with its neighbors and also the rest of the Middle East.
Yeah, thanks. Again, a very comprehensive answer. Let's perhaps, to conclude our discussion, focus on a different kind of relation that actors inside of the country have towards the region. We have already discussed in the last episode about the role and the challenges that are posed by the so-called popular mobilization front. The groups that are inside and outside of it, as we established last time. And of course, many of them being part of what is called resistance axis, and which includes groups in many other countries in the regions from Lebanon to Yemen. So sort of a provocative question. Does what happened to one of these groups, for example, in Yemen or, for example, in Lebanon, have an effect on what the groups that are in Iraq that are affiliated to this resistance movement? Does this have an effect on what they are going to do inside of Iraq? Perhaps Sajjad, let's start with you this time.
Sure. I mean, yes, the resistance axis, as they like to be known, is active outside of Iraq and is connected to events that take place in Syria, in Lebanon, certainly in Yemen. And I think that the relationships between these groups or between these events is a complicating factor for the Iraqi government. It wants the PMF to, you know, focus only on Iraq. It does not want groups to be active outside the country. But unfortunately, these groups work with Iran, and Iran believes that it needs to maintain its network of activities and pressure and influence across all these countries and across the entire region. And I cannot see why Iran would change that stance, number one. Number two, I can't see why these groups would sort of give up on their relationship with Iran. I don't think that will happen. So really, it's a matter of trying to enforce upon these groups the rules and to make sure that they understand Iraq cannot continue to be tied directly to events in Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and elsewhere. Iraq needs to sort of protect itself. If Iraqis want to, you know, go and fight in Syria or Lebanon, that is no longer acceptable. If it was acceptable for a period of time because of ISIS, Daesh, whatever, it is no longer acceptable. And if these groups persist on threatening Iraq's sovereignty, but also threatening the sovereignty of other governments and other countries and disrupting other countries, then Iraq needs to take steps to prevent that and take action, whether it's outlawing these groups, whether it's going after them, whether it's imposing the rule of law. But we cannot have multiple decision makers in the country. A chief or a leader of one of these groups deciding that, you know, we need to launch a drone and attack some facility in the UAE or in Saudi to send a message or to show our partners in Lebanon and or Syria or Yemen that we're with them and we're in solidarity. That has huge implications for Iraq's foreign relations. So we cannot let somebody just decide that because of their sort of ideological views or their own political views. That is complete contradiction of sovereignty and government and, you know, rule of law. It goes against that completely. So I think the past governments have failed to address that, which is a shame. And I think the next governments must address this. Otherwise, other countries will take matters into their own hands. Turkey is already doing that, has already done that in northern Iraq and Kurdistan region, and will probably continue to do that because it feels the Iraqi government is weak, and therefore Turkey must take action to, at least from its view, protect its national security. I think, you know, you can expect a response from the UAE and Saudi if their interests are attacked in the future from within Iraq, and likewise for other countries. And I think the international community will also be worried that the resistance axis continues to operate without sort of any challenge. But I hope that our politicians are able to sort of become firmer in their response in the future. At the moment, it's not been great, but in the future, we hope that they become a little bit more statesmanlike and try to sort of impose rule of law on everybody inside the country.
Thanks a lot. Again, very, very interesting. George, what do you have to add to this question, to also, in a sense, sort of to concluding our discussion?
Iraq must fight its own battles and not the battles of others. I believe that Iraqis have shed a lot of blood in the last couple of decades wars that were absolutely against the interest of the people of Iraq. These wars were devised by a dictator and subsequently forced upon Iraq by terrorism. Iraq desperately needs peace and stability. And this peace and stability can only come if Iraq behaves responsibly in the region. And of course, I have to say that this is a game where Iraq has to engage with all its partners, because as much as Iraq should respect the sovereignty of other countries in the region, these countries themselves need to respect Iraqi sovereignty. I wish to see a situation where the government of Iraq would not only dissociate from rogue elements that are under different pretexts and under different flags fighting outside the borders of Iraq, which I believe is running against the constitution of Iraq, but also actively engages in putting an end to young Iraqis being used as pawns in the games of others. It is for every Iraqi to decide whether Iraq has a place in the axis of resistance. I have no idea what Iraq resists in the axis of resistance. I think what Iraq needs to resist is internal instability, results of decades of dictatorship and internal strife, and it should focus on finding its foothold in the region among countries that are engaged in building a better future and creating a semblance of stability. And ultimately, Iraq has to draw a better future for its own people. And I don't think that this can go together with external adventurism. And I'm very confident that the new government will be responsibly dealing with this matter.
Thanks a lot, Ambassador George. Thanks a lot, Sajjad. This was two separate but very, very interesting discussions that we had over the last two episodes of this podcast. I thank you very, very much on behalf of the ASPR team. We hope that we'll be in touch in the future, and wish you all the best in your work to Baghdad and to Singapore. All the best and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Subscribe to our podcast or visit the website insideconflict.com. For more information about the work of the ASPR, visit aspr.ac.at. Until next time.